بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
لله الأسماء الحسنى ندعوه بها، لله الأسماء الحسنى ندعوه بها.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم everyone. My name is Hadi Furushan. And we are here on to talk about the work that Justice 360 does, but specifically on specific areas of legal rights that might be of benefit to the community. So just to give you a brief idea of what Justice 360 is, it's an umbrella group of different lawyers who are Muslim lawyers who are working together on, for one, we create legal bulletins, so every 15 days or so, you'll see one of these on the Justice 360 website. We've collected them here into this pamphlet that I think has the past 2 years worth of these legal bulletins. So the lawyers here that you see create those bulletins, work on them, and put them out. That's one of the things that they do. We also are available for if people have quick questions that they want consultation on. There's not always an answer, but if we can't answer, we try to answer and try to be available to the community. We're also trying to just branch out our services as time goes on and become more available so that if people need a group of lawyers who are Muslim, they can come to us. Now, none of us actually, Justice 360 is not something where everyone works there full time. Everybody has their jobs that are full time jobs, and they just try to help out as much as they can with Justice 360 work. So, just as a brief description before we get into who the speakers are going to be and the topics, Sister Najma and I are going to talk about a little bit why we think this is important. So, I applied to law school, I think, 5 years ago. When I was applying to law school, my experience was that for the most part, I really didn't know anything. I knew nothing about the process. I knew nothing about what being a lawyer would be like. And similarly, if I had a question, a legal question, I had no idea who I would go to. I would Google things for the most part. But obviously that doesn't give you all the answers. Though as a lawyer, I'll tell you still, sometimes you Google things. But it was something that over time, as I went through law school and then graduated, and now I've been a lawyer for the past few years, you start to learn, first of all, that the number of Muslims are growing for doing this. And the more they can work together, the more it can provide a genuine service for the community, and the more community members don't feel confused or lost or taken advantage of in those situations. So as a situation arises that for someone requires a little bit of legal expertise, and so there can be more groups that can provide that service for them, or at least be there to provide the reference to someone who can provide that service for them. So as those of you who are thinking about going to law school, or are lawyers, or just interested in learning something about the law, keep that in mind and how you can be of service to people, because everyone here has a full-time job that isn't, you know, Justice 360, but at the very least, the thought is, be available so that if people have questions and issues and things they want to bring up, they can do that. So with that, I'll give it to Sister Najma, who will also give a brief description before we get into the main talk.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for coming to the session. I am Sister Najma Mel Jaffety, and I am, I just finished up my first year of law school, so I still have 2 years to go. One of the reasons what I would say that this is important, that I'm glad that you guys are all attending, and hopefully there's some future sister lawyers in the crowd as well. This is very important because every time I tell someone that I'm in law school, people are like, oh yes, we need more Muslim lawyers. And that's just a testament of the fact that we don't know a lot of the things that we should know. And hopefully, we hope that through this group we can facilitate that, but also to encourage you all to also seek the knowledge and, you know, seek our somewhat advice that we have that we can provide. And one of the things that I do as part of the group, I'm part of a team that we do. One of our main projects right now is doing Islamic wills, and we're doing, it's still in the premature phase, but we're trying to make a website where it can be interactive and you can do your Islamic will through that website. Also, another project that's very important to me, and I hope will benefit all of you as well, is we want to do a referral program because to refer people to lawyers within their area, because each state has different laws depending on where you are. So if I'm practicing in a certain state, I might not know your state law. And so having that basis, that referral system we can have where we can refer you to someone who is an expert in the question that you have in the area that you are. I want to reach out to the sisters that are in the room to let you know that if you have any questions specifically, if you want to become a lawyer, if you're looking into going to law school, please feel free to come up to me. You know, we have a Q&A session afterwards, but if you don't feel comfortable asking a question within the session, please seek me out and ask all questions and any questions, because I know that's what I did when I was looking into law school. So, inshallah, everyone benefits from the program. Thank you.
All right, so inshallah, with that brief introduction, and like Sister Nadia said, if you have questions as time goes on, if questions about the topics that you hear in particular, please ask them afterwards. Or if you have questions just generally, feel free to come up to any five of us, and I guarantee you that everyone here is nice and welcoming and would love to answer whatever questions you have. No one is mean. So I'll start with Brother, the people who will be speaking. One of them is Brother Dawood Walid. He works for CARE in Detroit, and he's going to be talking a little bit about interactions with the FBI and also border patrol and things in that area, and hopefully give some guidance for those people, because I know for a lot of Muslims that's what we're dealing with regularly. Leading off of that, Brother Muhammad Sabur from Muslim Advocates is going to be giving us a presentation entitled Securing Our Communities, and it's going to be about, and I'll give a kind of a more detailed description as we lead into him. And then finally, are you going to go first? Brother Muhammad Sabur is going to go first, my apologies. So his topic will be securing our communities, and it's going to be about FBI intelligence and also partially related to the NYPD surveillance in New York, and how those two have, just to a large extent, come together in a lot of different cities, and really what to do if you're in that situation. What do I do when the FBI comes to the door and says, I want to talk to you? What's the best approach to take? And I know that's something that a lot of people deal with, and hopefully we'll get some guidance to that as time goes on. So we're very thankful to have Brother Muhammad Sabur with us. Let's start it off with a loud salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
All right.
Assalamu
alaikum, everyone. Thank you for the kind introduction, and thank you to the folks at Muslim Congress and Justice 360 for allowing me the opportunity to come and join you all today, and congratulations on another annual conference. I want to talk to you a bit today about the topic that you see here, securing our communities, safely interacting with law enforcement. What is interaction with law enforcement? What does it look like? What is our history? What is the community's history with law enforcement in the past few years? And what do we do when we get that, you know, knock-knock or that phone call, and it's the FBI? How do you react in that situation? So I'm hoping to cover a bit of that today. By way of background, my name is Muhammad Sabur. I serve as a staff attorney at Muslim Advocates, and I'll go into a bit more about who we are and the work that we do. So our agenda today, again, I'm going to talk about what Muslim Advocates does, talk about local and federal intelligence gathering on the Muslim community, within the Muslim community, as well as surveillance on the community. And that includes not only our mosques and masajids, but also Muslim-owned businesses, schools, and student groups and organizations. And then lastly, of course, cover what to do when contacted by the FBI or law enforcement. So a bit of background on Muslim Advocates. We were established in 2005 as a 501c3 sister entity to the National Association of Muslim Lawyers. I gave a bit of this background yesterday for anyone at the Youth Summit, so I apologize for repeating myself. But we are a group of full-time attorneys bringing expertise from different points of background. So I, for example, worked for the U.S. Congress, worked in Washington, D.C. We have other staff members that also worked on the Hill, worked for the Department of Justice, the ACLU, and we've come from different law firms across the country. We focus on three main program areas. The first is ending racial and religious profiling. The second is strengthening Muslim charities, and that's actually the program that I had, and I'm going to talk for just a brief moment at the end about the work that I do with Muslim charities. And the third is our work on combating anti-Muslim hate. But our mission is to promote equality, liberty, and justice for all by providing leadership through legal advocacy, policy engagement, and community education. I think those three components are necessary and go together to promote the full and meaningful participation of Muslims in American public life. So to jump right in, I want to talk about some of the rights and our values that are at stake in a conversation on intelligence gathering, on the community's role with law enforcement. So there are certain rights that we have guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution, and this isn't a class, Know Your Rights, or a class on the First Amendment, but you should know that as Americans, you have rights to the freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and to be free from group government intrusion. No person should feel that because of the color of their skin, their ethnic background, their race, or their religion, that they, for any reason, should be subject to additional government scrutiny or surveillance. We know about the role of the Muslim community. We know what it means to us. We value strong communities. We value healthy societies. We want to make this world a better place for ourselves, our families, and for future generations. And similarly, we want to make our neighborhoods and our states and our country a better place for all of us to live and coexist together. And we believe, just like all other Americans, that people should be free to congregate, pray, give to charity, give their zakat and sadaqah without fear from government intrusion. I shouldn't have to worry about the government watching over my shoulder when I'm going to the mosque. But unfortunately, that is exactly what is happening in communities across the country. And I'm going to drill down and talk about a local situation that you may have heard about. And that's the NYPD, the New York City Police Department. Through a series of articles released by the Associated Press since August of last year, we've come to understand that the NYPD has surveilled the Muslim community across the Northeast, not just in New York, but in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Connecticut. They have surveilled mosques, businesses, college students, MSAs, organizations. And when I mean businesses, I mean like your local halal butcher. When I mean schools, I mean elementary schools that serve Muslim girls from the ages of 4 to 7. And when I mean surveilling mosques, I mean that they have been coming, or that they went, we know, for example, to a mosque in Paterson, New Jersey, which is in North New Jersey. And they wrote down the license plates of all the cars in the parking lot, paying particular attention to the license plates from New York, so they could follow those cars back into New York and track and surveil those individuals. The NYPD would go into our mosques and write down the names of people that they talked to, the names of books on the shelves, what the khatib was talking about at Salat al-Jumma. This is all what the NYPD has done, not on the basis of any criminal activity that was going on at these mosques, but they targeted them because they were Muslim. And you know, more alarming, I think, to some of the people in this room, is that they targeted Shia organizations, not because they fell under the broader rubric of being a Muslim community, but because they are Shia. Let me say that again. The NYPD surveilled Shia mosques because they contained Shia Muslims. This is alarming to me as an American, as a lawyer, as someone who understands the Constitution and our rights, and it should be alarming to all of us. Targeting Americans for surveillance based on our faith is wrong, and it undermines public safety. It creates distrust with law enforcement, and it doesn't allow law enforcement to keep their eye on the ball of looking at criminal activity. So over the past few months, Muslim advocates, along with a number of organizations, including Muslim Congress, filed complaints with state attorneys general in Pennsylvania, in New York, in New Jersey, and those states did not take action. We even filed a complaint with 115 organizations with the U.S. Department of Justice, and they have failed to act. So in early June, Muslim advocates filed a lawsuit on behalf of New Jersey Muslims in a New Jersey federal court, asking for a court to issue an injunction to stop the NYPD from these actions. It directly challenges the surveillance program of Muslim community members in New Jersey, and that will hopefully have repercussions for their activities in other states and for law enforcement agencies across the country. The plaintiffs were as diverse as the community is, including an Army reservist, a Vietnam War vet, a halal butchery owner, a Shia mosque, college students, and imams. You can get more information on that at our website, muslimadvocates.org/nspine. I want to take a step back and talk about the broader picture now. What is intelligence gathering? Why is it happening? Intelligence gathering, what that looks like is when members of our community are contacted by law enforcement, and that can include anyone from the FBI to local police departments. The federal government has what's called joint terrorism task forces, where they partner federal agents with local law enforcement, and they try to gain information about our community. But oftentimes, from what the stories that we hear, people in the community are contacted by the FBI. They say, hey, we understand you're the new president of so-and-so mosque. We just want to meet, get to know each other, and establish good relations. Or they may just have a few questions. Let's meet for chai or dinner. These meetings are targeted as opportunities to improve relations between the community and law enforcement. To really drill down, what ends up happening at those meetings is that FBI agents will often ask community members, tell me a bit about your travel background, or do you know such and such person, fulan bin fulan, in the community? Do you know where they've been? Do you know where they went, why they went there? Do you know about their connections to, for example, relevant to this audience, what are their connections in Iran? Where do they go? Who do they talk to? What do they feel about the political situation there? And you should know that Muslim advocates and and any legal organization, my co-panelists will agree, that members of the community, that no one should talk to law enforcement without the assistance of an attorney. We're not saying there should be a blockade, but we're saying that community members should protect themselves. Why are these tactics happening? Why is this scrutiny coming upon us? And, you know, many times we just think of reactionary. 9/11 happened, we should just accept this as our burden to go on. I've talked to people in the community, and for example, one of the plaintiffs from our lawsuit in the NYPD case, he was 8 years old when 9/11 happened. Why should that individual be subject to scrutiny? He was 8 years old. He had nothing to do with those acts or anything else since then. But this is a quote from a retired FBI special agent. This is guidance that has come from the top down in the FBI. They have been instructed to know everything that is going on in their local malls. They get points for promotion. They get considered for special treatment in the FBI based on how many sources they have and how many confidential informants they can gather. FBI surveillance guidelines allows for the mapping of communities where they can drill down and look at localities and see how many mosques are they? How many mosques are there? Where are they located? What communities do they serve? They can also surveil protected activities. They can look at where you're giving zakat and sadaqah, and they can infiltrate our mosques. And I'll give you some recent examples of that. What's the problem with this? Should we just accept this as Muslims? You know, should people just be okay with the fact that, you know, we're the ones under the microscope now, it's gonna happen. I wanna say that we should remember, every person has a responsibility, regardless of whether they're American or not, Muslim or not, have a responsibility to report. Every person has a responsibility to report criminal activity to law enforcement. But what's going on is not gathering intelligence and gathering information about criminal activity. It's about just getting to know who there is in the community so they can map us out too. So they can find out that when there's a situation with Egypt, and this is real, when the Arab Spring was going on, 1 or 2 years ago, they would approach communities and say, we want to know the names of every Egyptian in your community. But the analogy that I like to use is that these are just fishing expeditions. Now, when you go fishing, you know what you want. You want a fish, right? You want to walk home with a fish. But you don't know where it's going to be. You don't know exactly the hook, line, or sinker that you should use, where you should go on the lake. So you're just going to cast your net far and wide, and hopefully you'll catch something. And this is really what law enforcement is doing. They don't know where to go to look for that criminal activity, or at least that's not what they're following. They're just throwing a net far and wide so they can find out who is where, so that when something happens, who do I know who to go talk to? They also talk about these as an opportunity to discuss radicalization, as though there is some kind of process by which a person adopts violent ideology. Unfortunately, in many cases, we found that individuals that are the subject of some of these federal prosecutions have diminished capacity. I mean, literally, IQ under 70, you know, they may have mental or physical problems that lead them to adopt these ideologies. This isn't something that Muslims have a monopoly on. We don't know something greater than everyone else about violence or criminal activity. We're just like everyone else. But unfortunately, we're being tracked and surveilled. And when community members and community leaders meet with law enforcement, the names that you give out, the names of organizations that you talk about, those people are added to the list. So you should know that any details provided to law enforcement, names of community members, past travel histories, personal details, can all be the basis for surveillance. You're basically opening the doors for them. Speaking to law enforcement without an attorney places you and your family and your community at great risk. And that can look anything like immigration trouble, where we've heard specific cases where family members, you know, visa application or green card application will actually be delayed or hampered because of what they perceive as maybe a lack of cooperation with law enforcement. You should remember that any statements that you give can be used against you in a court. Since 9/11, the Department of Justice, the most prosecuted crime that they've worked on is not terrorism related or even financial crime with all the problems with our economy. It's lying to a federal official. And that can look something as simple as, if they ask you, 2 years ago when you went for Ziyarah, what date did you leave the country? And you said, it was May 15th. They'll come back to you and say, you lied to us. You say, I didn't lie. They'll say, well, you left on May 17th, it wasn't May 15th. You said it was an honest mistake, but that's too bad because that's lying to a federal official. Something as small as that can trip you up and land you literally a prison sentence. So you should know that any statements that you make can be used against you at a later date and time. And I mean later, 20 years later. And you should know that lying to a federal official, sometimes we think we can be smart. You know, I've got nothing to hide. I'm just going to tell them what I know. And when they start asking me something sensitive, I'm going to be a bit smart. I'm not going to let them trip me up. But you should know that lying to a federal official, even by omission, is a crime. So when they ask you, okay, when you went on that trip for Ziyarat, we have you down as visiting these cities. You know, maybe on your I-94 form when you came back into the country, you listed the cities that you went to. And you didn't include a city that you stopped off in for lunch. And they'll say, but that's lying to a federal official because you didn't tell us about it. Something as small as that. You should know that that interaction happens even after their notebook closes. When they want to meet with you for chai or dinner, all of that is talking to a federal official. So as you can, I mean, when you're hearing this, when I hear this, when I know that this goes on in the community, this chills people's involvement in the community. They don't want to go to a mosque where they know that people have close relations with law enforcement, where their name is going to be maybe given to a law enforcement official because the leader of the mosque has a close relation with the local FBI office, because they want to maintain good relations, but it places their community at risk. Government scrutiny has broken up communities, literally, and has stopped people from going to the mosque. And I'm going to talk about a recent case on the next slide. These issues affect Muslims across America. This isn't just limited to brown Muslims, white Muslims, black Muslims. It's across the board. And it's not just Sunnis, it's not just Shias, it's Ahmadis, it's Ismailis, it's across the community. Unfortunately, American Muslims, we now find ourselves in a position that other communities have found themselves in the past or continue to find themselves in today. So it's important that we realize that we're not just this one community that's under, you know, under the microscope and under scrutiny to the exclusion of everyone else. We have partners that we can talk to, and that's some of the beautiful work that's happening now that I know my co-panelists will agree with, is that there are communities that we can talk to. We can talk with each other. We should be open about talking about these issues in our communities and with our neighbors. Together, we can secure our communities and make a difference. I want to talk about some recent cases. You know, one of the things that I was asked to talk about is FBI intelligence gathering in our communities under the guise of outreach. What does that look like? Some of you may have iftars in your community that are open. You know, you want to open your doors in Ramadan. You want to open your doors to your neighbors. And sometimes you'll have law enforcement shows up. I don't mean the local beat cop that's going to be protecting your mosque and make sure kids aren't vandalizing your property or breaking windows. I'm talking about FBI officials. And this has happened. I know this happens in the Shia community in particular, where they'll show up to a Ramadan iftar and just ask to, you know, we're just going to be here. We don't want to talk. You know, we just want to sit down and meet people and enjoy it, break bread together. Well, what you see there is the headline from the Washington Post. Due to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by the ACLU and some other organizations, we learned that the FBI was using these opportunities to gather intelligence on the community. When they would show up at an iftar, they would write down the name of the person to their right and to their left. They would then go back and cross-reference their social security number and driver's license. When that person would talk to them about, yeah, I moved to the country in, you know, the early 1970s, I worked for that company and went to that school, and my kids go to this college, all of that information has ended up in FBI files. They detail activities, leaders in the community, conversations including their backgrounds, travel histories. I mean, it's really extensive. And this is when they tell us that they want to establish better relations with the community. Similarly, on the bottom left, you have the FBI sent an informant into a mosque in Orange County, California. And it got so bad that the community leaders actually called the FBI and said, there's this guy that's showed up at our mosque recently, and he's talking to people in a way that makes them really uncomfortable, talking about jihad and, you know, we should do something and attack. And it ended up that was the FBI informant. So even when we think that, oh, maybe there might be this problem in our community, unfortunately, it's often not the case. And I know it's a bit small, but right here, you know, these recent plots that you've heard about, when the FBI comes out and says that we stopped this big plot from happening, you know, America should be thankful for the role that law enforcement plays. Unfortunately, in a lot of these cases, as I mentioned, you have individuals with diminished capacity. They don't know any better. They get taken advantage of. And that makes the Muslim community look bad. You know, one other example that isn't on here, but I think that's relevant to especially us gathered at a conference. There was a conference held in 2007. At which an individual attended that the FBI later had an interest in. And so the FBI came back to the leaders of that conference and said, we want to know the names and contact and information of everyone that showed up at this conference, because there was one person there they were interested in. These community leaders, these organization leaders, they didn't know any better, and they gave out that list. 250 people got visits from the FBI. 250 people's names have now ended up in an FBI file, because their leaders didn't know that, you know, look, I should have some layers of protection between me and law enforcement. So you may think, I've done nothing wrong. I've got nothing to hide. Why do I want to stick my neck out there? Why do I want to attract further scrutiny when I could just answer their questions and they'll probably go along their way? But you should know that seeking the advice of an attorney and the assistance of an attorney in speaking with law enforcement is the smart thing to do. So what should you do when the FBI calls? I talked about a lot of the traps that you can find yourself in, so what should you do? So the first thing is, it's very simple. Speak to an attorney before speaking with law enforcement. You should know that when they show up at your door, there's no legal obligation for you to talk to them. Unless they show up with a warrant or a court order, you're under no obligation to talk. Well, I'll actually go into that in a minute. But you're actually under no obligation to speak with them. Besides giving them your identifying information, talking about your, confirming your immigration status, you don't have to give them a word further. Ask them for their business card. Every agent should be carrying a business card. Now you should know that when they come to you, they can lie to you to try to get you to talk. They may say that Brother Ali in the community told me I should come and talk to you, that you'd be willing, and you'd welcome me into your home, that we could have an open conversation. They can lie to you. They may say that there's an urgent situation that we need your information on right now. There's something developing that we need to know. They can lie to you. So the smart thing to do is to take their business card and to say that your attorney will get back with them. The second thing is, don't allow them into your home unless they have a warrant. Now, I mentioned a bit earlier that you don't have to talk to them unless they have a warrant or a court order. That's actually incorrect. You don't have to let them into your home unless they have a search warrant or a court order. If they do, inspect it, see what it says. If they don't, greet them outside your door. You wouldn't let any random stranger into your home to see your family, to see your valuables, or your private space. Why would you let law enforcement in just because they have a badge? So be careful to meet them outside your home and ask for that warrant if they have the right to come in. And even if they have a warrant, read it, see what they can take, but know that you don't have to talk to them. Again, take their business card and tell them that your attorney will get back to them. And the third thing is, express yourself. Oftentimes we feel, afraid that I don't want to attract their scrutiny. They're just going to ask me questions and go along their way. And that's not the case, unfortunately. We've heard time and time again where individuals will get approached by law enforcement, they'll answer their questions for 15 minutes, and then they'll get a call in 2 weeks. And then after that, they'll get a call in 2 weeks. And it doesn't stop, because now they've got an opening. Now they know that you're going to talk to them. And if you say that you don't want to talk to them, they're going to try to dig up something else that you already talked to them about. So what does this look like? I want to really show you in real life, what does this look like? So Muslim Advocates has produced a video called Got Rights. It's available online and on DVD in 5 languages, English, Arabic, Farsi, Urdu, and Somali. You can host a private screening at your home or at your mosque. We're happy to give you a copy. Or again, share it with friends and family by email. It shows you the right way to handle a visit from law enforcement, as well as the wrong way. And because I know this topic is going to be covered by Brother Dawood, it also actually has information and guidance about what to do when contacted by, when stopped at the border and at the airport. But you can do that portion later. So I want to show you a bit about that video and show you that portion on guidance about how to deal with contact from law enforcement.
Can everyone hear?
Or your loved one who is innocent.
have dealt with many cases like the ones in the two examples you're about to see and have developed tips to help protect you and your family. Let's take a look at one of the most common scenarios. Knock, knock. Who's there? The FBI.
Mr. Sultan? Floodlight? Is that legal? I just got a few questions. We're out meeting with community members, talking to people. Not in any trouble or anything. That's what you're worried about.
It's a beautiful home. This is Iran. How long have you been here in the States?
10 years now. You think it's a visit off? Every year.
Interesting president,
you say? How's your family doing today? Life living in the current year?
They're fine.
Well, we know you're involved in the community here. You're a member of the Muslim Student Association. I'm your treasurer. What kinds of activities do you organize?
Well, we play intramural soccer, barbecues at the beach.
You know someone by the name of Kim Yong Amini? Did you ever see him at your MSA meeting?
Yes, I think he came to some of our meetings, but I haven't seen him.
Graduated about a year ago.
Yes, we hear he works for the Iranian government now.
How long ago?
3 years.
And how often do you talk to Kim?
Never? Are you sure?
Yes.
You haven't seen him since he graduated?
No.
No?
No, I haven't seen or talked to him in months.
Ali, are you aware that lying to a federal officer is a crime?
Now, I know what a lot of you are wearing. Why would an FBI agent be interested in me? I've done nothing wrong. I have nothing to hide. Besides, I want to help law enforcement fight crime, too. Well, it's not that simple. Law enforcement sometimes engage in fishing expeditions to sniff out any hint of illegal activity. The government's list suspicious organizations, speech, activities, and materials changes every day, so it's hard to know what might be okay one day and suspicious the next. Here are some important things to know. First, if you are contacted by law enforcement, don't answer any questions beyond giving your name and consult an attorney immediately. Remember, the FBI investigates crimes, which include lying by omission. Funny enough, they can lie to you legally, so talking without an attorney is very risky. Sometimes having a lawyer is enough to deter law enforcement from contacting you again. Number two, don't let law enforcement into your home without a search warrant. If they have one, look carefully to see what the court has allowed them to search and what items they are allowed to seize. Ask what the visit is about. Take their business cards and tell them your lawyer will contact them. Remember, you don't have to answer any questions, warrant or not. Be polite, and also make sure members of your family and household are the same. Finally, freedom to express your opinions, join groups, and practice your religion as you wish is an American value. So is knowing your rights. Do both. Now let's watch Ali do it right.
Martinez, this is Special Agent Renault. We're with the FBI. You're not in any trouble at all. We're just visiting the community and getting to know some people. Can we come inside? Just ask you a few routine questions.
What sort of questions?
It's no big deal. You can talk out here in front of your neighbors if you like. You might be more comfortable.
I'd like to talk to my lawyer first. You can just take your business cards off. I'll have him call you. You want a lawyer? You really want to take it to that level? This complicates things. If you talk now, we can make this real simple, quick, and painless. It's not you enough to hide, right? Do you have a search warrant? No, we don't have a warrant, but it would be in your best interest to do this the easy way. I have nothing to hide, sir. Please just give me your business cards and I'll have my attorney contact you. Well done!
Yeah, I get a kick out of watching that video every time. I get a kick out of that because I could definitely see myself in that situation. You know, before I kind of, you know, understood how to do this, many of us, I hear this a lot, you know, I could easily see myself getting trapped in that kind of situation, but it's so simple to find your way out. So I hope that was helpful. So this is my last slide. What can you do? The first thing is to get informed and to be smart. Sign up for our e-newsletter list. I'm actually going to pass this around. We can keep in touch with you on a regular basis. We send out advisories when people are coming back from Hajj, when we start hearing about incidents in the community where there is a spike in activity, where they are reaching out to individuals, for example, around the time of the Arab Spring last year. Sign up. You know, let us keep in touch with you. I promise we don't spam, send multiple emails a week, things like that. The second thing is to watch the full video. Share it with your family and friends. I share this exact video with my parents anytime they leave the country. The second half of the video actually covers, like I mentioned, the airport situation, and I know that's helpful for a lot of people in the community. I have a lot of material that I brought with me, including a copy of a report that we issued in October of last year to coincide with the Patriot Act. Talking about the state of freedom for American Muslims 10 years after the Patriot Act. We also have guidance that you can take with you. Talk to my lawyer. Again, it has those bullet points. And then, like I mentioned, I provide my work is specifically with mosque and charity leaders. If you are a charity leader or a mosque leader or you want to give some information back to your community when you go home, grab one of these cards. I provide free legal guidance and assistance to 501c3 organizations on everything from IRS compliance to governance matters to financial matters, how to handle and disperse sadaqah contributions. So get in touch with us. The second is to protect your family, friends, and community. We have copies of DVDs. I brought a small number with me. If you are going to go back to your community and host a private screening, I'll give you a copy of the DVD today. Otherwise, you can sign up to receive one on our website for free. But host a screening at your mosque or with friends or a gathering. And then the last thing is, again, remember, if contacted by the FBI, talk to a lawyer. You can either contact us at Muslim Advocates. That's our phone number, our email address. You can go to our website, muslimadvocates.org. Or even look in your local community. A lot of times, criminal defense attorneys, for example, will represent people for free for that first interview. I mean, I know countless criminal defense attorneys. They know this is a problem for our community, and they're willing to help. So let's reach out, keep ourselves safe, and keep our families protected. Thank you so much for your time. Assalamu alaikum.